Yes, I love it.
Sweet, he's giving me 300 boxes of grape nuts flakes.
Friends anybody ever had. And it's funny, but I feel as if I've known you all the time.
I love music, good music, but not swing. I sing.
Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Each week, we will dive into a certain star and talk to some people who know much about him. I'm Kate, your host, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Hope you enjoy
it. And welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Today's episode is Grace Kelly, and we will be talking with Ginny, a researcher and fan of Grace Kelly. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Hi, Ginny. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for having me. This is such an honor and a pleasure to be talking about Grace Kelly today.
Of course. So are you ready to talk all things Grace Kelly? Because I think you know about her more than I do.
I can't wait. Let's just dive right into it.
Please. So go ahead. Without further ado, tell us what you know.
Well, Grace was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on November 12th, 1929 to John Brendan Kelly and Margaret Major Kelly. Mm-hmm. And she was the third child of the family. She had two older siblings, her first being Margaret, also known as Peggy, who was 4 years older than her, and then also John Jr., also known as Kel, who was 2 years older than her.
Mm-hmm.
So she was the middle child of the family.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't she have any younger siblings?
She also had one younger sibling named Lizanne, who was 4 years younger than her.
Oh. Mm-hmm. All right, so talk to me a little bit about her childhood.
Well, it's interesting because she was really the introverted one of the all the children. She loved stories and poetry and just being by herself, playing games and coming up with stories. And she always had that in her to, you know, be a storyteller. And she wasn't extroverted. She didn't like to get out there and, you know, throw herself out there as much like her other siblings. And, you know, her father didn't like that because he was more of a competitive person.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first rower to win 3 Olympic gold medals. So, you know, the whole family sort of had that and then had their children be competitive. And she was different mm-hmm. from the start. Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about how she got into acting.
Well, it actually all starts even from an early age, I would say. She went to Raven Hill Academy, which was a Catholic school in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And actually there she was in her first play called Don't Feed the Animals.
Hmm.
And she was always interested in the dramatic arts from an early age. And then also she went to Stevens School later on for high school,
mm-hmm.
and she also was in a few plays there, and also, you know, just in some of the local theaters, she would be in some of the productions and things, so that was always her passion.
Hmm. How interesting. So, how did she get into Hollywood?
Well, when she was 18, which was in 1947,
mm-hmm.
she went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. She had decided she wanted to go for acting and a career in theater or Broadway, you know, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so she just totally went for that, even against her parents' wishes. They didn't think that was going to be the right path for her. To quote her parents, they thought acting was a slim cut above Streetwalker.
Mm.
So she really was on her own as far as, you know, support, and she really just paved her own way. And I think that's why she was so successful, because she was so determined and just so passionate, even in the face of opposition.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
She did have two influences, actually, that did help her along. she had two uncles on her father's side.
Mm-hmm.
One was, his name was Walter Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually in Broadway. So he, you know, he was involved in acting in the theater. And then also her other uncle, George Kelly, he was also an actor and a playwright. So they both sort of were a positive influence on her. And I think that they sort of encouraged her to go for acting and be in that world.
Oh, that's great. So did she enjoy the Academy of Dramatic Arts?
She did. Actually, she moved to New York to be there full-time. And, you know, that is a prestigious school, by the way. You know, Spencer Tracy, Katherine Hepburn, Rosalind Russell, they were alumni from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then also when she was there, she actually had to make money to pay her tuition. So the way she did that was she was a model.
Mm.
And so she was not only, you know, studying acting and drama, but she was in some commercials and print ads and also some fashion films. And so that's it sort of paved her way through college and also sort of just put herself in the public eye a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, how did she get, like, because she, I don't know what studio she was represented by, but so tell me how she got into Hollywood.
All right, let me give you a little bit of a backstory here.
Okay.
So her main Broadway debut was a play called The Father.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was actually, I would say, her big break in coming to Hollywood, because mm-hmm. Edith Van Cleve had seen the performance, and mm-hmm. she was actually Marlon Brando's agent
at the
time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she saw her in the play, and so she noticed her and, you know, thought she was a potential talent.
Mm-hmm. Who did she sign with?
She ended up... Okay, so what happened was Edith Van Cleve had sent photos of Grace to the Music Corporation of America,
uh-huh.
which was like a talent agency, and so they ended up offering her a contract. And then there was a man named Jay Cantor working there.
Mm-hmm.
He had also represented Marlon Brando. And he had sent the photos that Edith had sent to Stanley Kramer,
mm-hmm.
who he was at the time working on the film High Noon
mm-hmm.
with Fred Zinnemann.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, her photos got passed along a couple times till they finally realized, well, we need to meet with Grace, and she's potentially, you know, going to be the role of Amy Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So what was her first film?
Well, her first, okay, that is awesome. Some people forget, and even I do sometimes. Her mm-hmm. first film was 14 Hours.
Mm-hmm.
That was prior to, that was when she was with MCA.
Mm-hmm.
And she signed with MGM afterwards, but she had made a small appearance in 14 Hours, which was, it was sort of a film noir drama, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
She only made two scenes in it. I think it was only 2 minutes of film time for her, but that didn't really, you know, that wasn't that big of a deal for her.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't really her big break until High Noon.
Mm. So when did she make High Noon?
So High Noon was released in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
This, just for context, this is a Western film, and it starred Gary Cooper and Katie Dorado. And mm-hmm. actually, this film, in her opinion, was not one of her best. She thought her performance was subpar, even though I would argue that her acting honestly suited the character
mm-hmm.
you know, of Amy, because she's really more of a innocent, you know, quiet Quaker. But she didn't think that was her best film role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then talk to me through some of her most iconic movies that you know of.
Well, what came after High Noon was she went back and did some more Broadway and TV dramas. Mm-hmm. But then she actually ended up signing on with MGM when she was going to film Mogambo.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing. She had signed on with MGM, but this was actually under two conditions because she decided she wanted to, sort of look at the contract and she wanted to make her own rules about it. She wanted to make sure that she had time to go back to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And also live in New York, and she didn't want to be tied down to MGM. I think probably in her mind she was thinking, well, MGM is not the best studio to be under,
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So she had made Mogambo, and that was with Clark Gable and Ava Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
And
good
I think
movie.
It's a wonderful movie, and I think that cemented a friendship with her and Ava. And again, it was just another film under her belt to keep her in the public eye and just keep her name out there.
Mm-hmm. So, so she makes Mogambo. It's a success of a film.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
then she starts working under Hitchcock, is that right?
Yes. She makes three Hitchcock films, Dowling for Murder, Rear Window, and To Catch a Thief. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that those three are her most important and most iconic films. I mean, when you think of Grace Kelly, you think of Lisa Carol Fremont coming in into that apartment with that black and white Edith Head dress on.
Mm-hmm.
That famous close-up, that is absolutely her most iconic role. Hitchcock really put her on the map, really made her Grace Kelly.
Mm. Absolutely. Let's talk about Dial In for Murder real quick.
Okay. So how Hitchcock found Grace, this was sort of a separate event, was he actually had saw her in a screen test for the film Taxi.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of the studios usually would exchange screen tests with, directors and such persons. And so he had seen her in that screen test, and he thought, well, maybe she will fit the role for Margot Wendis.
Mm-hmm.
So he flew her out, and I think just right off the bat, he knew that she was going to be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they had actually borrowed her from MGM. Warner Brothers had borrowed her. Actually, most of her films were other studios borrowing her from MGM. So most of her films, even though she was under contract with MGM, she didn't make that many MGM films.
Hmm. How many MGM movies did she make?
Let me see. So we have High Noon, Mogambo, High Society,
mm-hmm.
The Swan.
Yeah, because High Society and The Swans were remakes.
Yes, both of those were remakes, but we can touch on that later.
Okay.
Sure. And so I think four or five of her films were MGM. She made a total of 11 films, though.
She didn't make that many, then.
Mm-mm, but the interesting thing was her career only lasted about 5 years. So in 5 years, she made 11 films. And in 1 year, 1954, she had made five of her films, I believe. So she made half of her films in a span of roughly a year.
Yeah.
So she was just totally nose to the grindstone, absolutely determined to put herself out there, make herself known, and perfect her craft.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was very talented, I will give her that, especially in Rear Window.
Mm-hmm, I would say that was...
Even though she doesn't have a big part in Rear Window,
mm-hmm.
She's still good. Dial In for Murder is good. It stars Robert Cummings, I know that. And so just to see her with Robert Cummings was just incredible, to see them having chemistry together. And it's good that she had a big part, because usually in Hitchcock films, you know, besides To Catch a Thief, she doesn't have big roles in them. She dies.
Right.
So it was nice to see her actually in some of these roles. Let's talk about High Society real quick, because High Society is very iconic. It's a remake of the Philadelphia Story, but it's a musical.
Yes, it's a romantic musical comedy, and this was her last role before she became Princess of Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is probably in my top three Grace Kelly films, because I just think the cast is so iconic. We have Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, Celeste Holm,
mm-hmm.
Louis Armstrong in the band.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a hit. I mean, I think that her as Tracy Lord was probably her most fun and just one of her best character roles. I just adore her in that character.
Mm-hmm. And The Swan was a remake of One Romantic Night, is that right?
I believe it was based on some play. I cannot recall at the moment, but I know it was based on something.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that The Swan and One Romantic Night are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And One Romantic Night was a Gish film in the 30s. That was like one of Gish's first talkies.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about how she met the Prince Rainier.
Yes, Prince Rainier.
Rainier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so how she met him was the country girl. Do you want to talk about the country girl?
Please. Absolutely. Okay. Please.
So the country girl, that is very important in her filmography, because that won her the Academy Award for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a little bit controversial in our community, because many people do believe that Judy Garland deserved it for A Star Is Born. And
yeah.
I totally sympathize with that, because, you know, Judy deserved some recognition. And honestly, I just wish that had been a tie.
I agree, because I haven't seen The Country Girl in a long time, but I have seen A Star Is Born, and those two movies are powerhouses.
They are. Definitely. And The Country Girl for Grace, really, it kind of shows her in a different role.
Mm-hmm.
She's deglamorized. She's the wife of an alcoholic, totally suffering, just tired and impoverished.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just strips all the glamour away and just really showcases her raw talent and how much emotion she could totally just put out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. She's not wearing hardly any makeup or anything. I've seen parts of The Country Girl, but it's been a long time since I've seen it in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very, I think that was probably one of the very first films I ever saw, Grace. And I was very impressed by it. I know a lot of people are like, well, Judy deserved it more. I think they both deserved it, really. I know a lot of people are a little sticky about Judy not winning that Oscar. I mean, Dorothy Dandridge was also nominated, and, you know, she didn't get it either. And her performance in Carmen Jones is absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely. You know, it's sometimes just unfair. But I think that Judy handled it pretty well. I mean, I know she was in the hospital
mm-hmm.
with her son. And mm-hmm. so, you know, all the publicity and paparazzi were in the room. And it was so overwhelming for her. And in a way, I think she was slightly relieved that she didn't win. Mm-hmm. Because they would have to release, you know, the photos and videos of her in the hospital.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, how did she meet this prince and become a princess?
Well, how she meets him was going back to The Country Girl, it was entered into the Cannes Film Festival the year following the release of it.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to make her way down to Cannes, or Cannes. I say Cannes because that's how you say it in French.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, and what happened was, actually, we have to credit Miss Olivia de Havilland for basically arranging the meeting between Rainier and Grace, because her husband at the time, Pierre Gallant, he was working for Paris Match magazine,
mm-hmm.
and so he kind of needed a photo story or, you know, like some sort of story for, you know, just like he was working on his magazine. And so, you know, the idea that came to him was that, well, why don't we have Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier meet? So Olivia de Havilland's husband had the connection, and Grace ended up agreeing to meet him, and, you know, that's how it happened.
And then they just started dating?
Well, what happened was they had met. Actually, he was late. That's funny thing. He was actually late to the meeting. So right off the bat, she wasn't sure, you know, he wasn't responsible or whatever. But they had, I would say overall, they had a good first impression of each other. You know, she thought he was sort of charming, and even though he was late. And then he thought she was just like a nice American girl, you know, no thoughts of marriage really crossing his mind at the time. But then when she went back to America, they started exchanging letters with each other after they had both, you know, written thank you correspondences to each other.
Oh.
So really the relationship, I would say, developed over letters. And I know we have some of those letters. So we can really see the passion and love they had for each other.
Oh, that's great. So when did he propose initially? Because she became Princess of Monaco initially.
Yes. So this was December 28th of 1955. That was when he went to America, to New York, and he proposed to her. And, you know, she just accepted right off the bat because her older sister was married by that point, and she was like, well, I really want to settle down and marry and have children. So she just went with it, and she totally was settled on marrying him.
And she only married once, didn't she?
Yes.
She only married once. Just the prince. I can imagine how she's trying to make this work. Like, becoming a princess overnight, most people would be like, yes, please. But I'm sure it was a very difficult transition for her.
It was, and we can touch on that in a minute, for sure. It was a hard transition for her, from becoming an old Hollywood icon to becoming one of the most famous princesses and royalty ever.
Absolutely. Let's see, what else is iconic about her movies? I know Rear Window, we touched base on Rear Window. To Catch a Thief.
Yes.
Talk me through it.
Yes, so To Catch a Thief, this was her third Hitchcock film. And definitely in my top three Grace Kelly films, just for aesthetic purposes and, you know, just the thrill of the adventure and romance. I just think this film is one of her pinnacle roles. And again, Paramount had borrowed her from MGM to play this role. So by now, I believe this was her time to be borrowed by a studio. So, you know, we have to thank other studios for reaching out and wanting her to be in their films, because we wouldn't have all the Hitchcock films if they hadn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I do. I love To Catch a Thief. It's set in Cannes and the French Riviera, so, you know, it's really just pleasing to the eye and aesthetic experience. And I do believe that it won Best Cinematography for an Oscar.
Oh.
So. And again, we also have Edith Head designing her costumes. I mean, that in and of itself is incredible. I mean, I think that Edith Head and Hitchcock, for Grace, she was their muse.
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely. So take me through her becoming a princess. Let's go through that.
All right. So April 4th, 1956 is when she left America to head for Monaco on the USS Constitution. And I believe that was about a week voyage. So she arrived at Monaco April 12th. And then, you know, only just a few days later, they had the wedding ceremony. Actually, they had two wedding ceremonies, one being the civil ceremony, which was April 18th, and then the famous religious ceremony. You know, we all know all the iconic pictures, and the wedding of the century at the St. Nicholas Cathedral. And again, Helen Rose designed her wedding dress, which is quite possibly one of the most beautiful wedding dresses ever to be made.
That's awesome. And she had a couple kids, right?
Yes, she had three kids. She had, her first was Princess Caroline. Her second was Prince Albert. And her third was Princess Stephanie.
Yeah, and Prince Albert's now running the country, is that right?
Yes, he is the heir. He was the heir to the throne, and he is now His Serene Highness Prince of Monaco.
Wow. That's awesome. I know there was a documentary made called Her Name Was Grace Kelly. Have you seen that?
Yes, this was just released only a few months ago. Her Name Was Grace Kelly. I recommend everyone check it out. It's on YouTube, or you can message me for the link. It's an incredible documentary. For Grace fans, it's, you must see it. I mean, it really shows her side, her fun, and a side that we don't see as much on screen, that she was not just a glamorous, you know, and she wasn't stuck up either. She was fun and free and candid, and just, it shows all the home movies of her, and it's just, it's a wonderful documentary.
It sure sounds like it. I watched a little bit of it. I haven't been able to finish it, but what I have been able to finish, or at least been able to see, I liked a lot. And because a lot of people, they hate on Grace Kelly, and I don't know why. I don't get it. I really don't. But I used to love her. I actually do. I remember a long time ago, I think it was 2012, Barbie came out with the Grace Kelly dolls, actually. And one of them was from To Catch a Thief, ironically, and her in the blue dress. And my mom bought it for me because she knows I collect dolls, which is, you know, everyone's like, really, Kate? You collect old dolls? Really? And I'm like, yeah. And I have it. So it's beautiful. They did a great job. But, you know, it's interesting when you think about Grace Kelly, of how she was this princess and how she left her Hollywood career behind. But in reality, she really was the embodiment of a princess. Like, that's the way I think. I think, like, marrying Prince Rainier was absolutely a dream. Perfect. She couldn't have had three of the best kids. I mean, Prince Albert, I think, is doing a great job running the country. I think he's been running it for years.
Yes, absolutely.
And now we must get to a point in our segment where we have to talk about the way she died. Because, girl, it was some BS.
Yes, this is quite a sobering topic, I will say.
All right, so talk to me, take me through that horrific accident that she had.
Well, you know, there's a lot of theories on it, and, you know, some controversies, and, you know, I try not to bash anybody or make assumptions, because I just, you know, I want to not offend or say anything wrong, but for sure I would say that, you know, there were signs early on that she had some vascular problems, you know, a few months before the accident. She used to do poetry readings, you know, just she was in groups and involved with clubs and things, and so she used to do poetry readings and things, and she started having to cancel on that because she was having headaches and migraines and high blood pressure. And, you know, that those were the early on signs that something was up. And so what happened was This was September 13th, 1982. She and her daughter, Stephanie, they were driving back to Monaco from their country home. Mm-hmm. They had a country home villa, you know, 30 minutes to an hour outside of the Palais Princier.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that, I am just taking this according to different sources I've read, but she had some pain in her skull or her head, and so she ended up blacking out and had a stroke. And then what happened was she basically lost control of her car, and they had come to a turn, and it was too sharp, and she couldn't control herself, and they ended up driving right off of the cliff and with her daughter right in the passenger seat.
Yeah, because I've heard her daughter was driving, but I've heard that story. I've heard that Grace was driving. And of course it's like, well, her daughter should know because she was in the car.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So yeah. Her daughter hasn't said anything, apparently. So
Well, that is something interesting, but
I don't know, which do you believe?
Well, I don't believe that she was driving the car, because I think she was only 16 or 17 at the time.
Uh-huh.
So, and I just cannot see Grace allowing her daughter to control a car. You know, if she had a license, I don't know what the age is in Monaco, but I just don't see her allowing Stephanie to control the car. Like, even if she was tired, Grace would have totally been in that driver's seat.
Yeah.
So I do think that something happened, you know, as she blacked out or had a stroke. But there are some theories that they had an argument and that they kind of were just fighting, and then she lost control. But there were signs early on that she had some problems. So,
Okay.
So I ate those signs early on to make my own conclusion about her accident.
God, have you seen pictures of that accident? Because they are terrible.
I've seen how the car was over the cliff, and you know, it was completely bashed, and it's just horrific.
And did she die on impact, or was she alive for a few days?
She had a concussion, and then she was taken to the hospital. And then what happened was the next night, the doctors had concluded that the brain damage was basically irreversible. And then what happened was they made the sad decision to take her off life support. And then September 14th was officially the day that she passed.
How old was she?
She was 52.
She was only 52. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you know how old her kids were at the time?
Stephanie was 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. So that makes Albert around 25, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Caroline was a year older, so I think 26, something in their mid-20s. The two older ones.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine losing my mom at that age. I'm 28, and I just can't imagine losing my mom at that age, especially from a car wreck. I'm surprised Stephanie survived.
She had some minor injuries herself, and, you know, I'm glad that nothing bad happened to her, because, I mean, I guess she probably was so... She was probably so upset at the time, and, you know, just having gone through that trauma, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine, even still today, it probably haunts her a little bit.
Absolutely. I would say so.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Well, what are the top five Grace Kelly films every fan needs to see?
Okay, so my top five personal favorites... coming in at number one would definitely be Rear Window.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you've never seen a Grace Kelly film, that you've got to see Rear Window first.
Yes.
I mean, a Hitchcock film with James Stewart, Thelma Ritter, Raymond Burr. It I mean, it's just so iconic. There are so many pinnacle scenes, and it really showcases her just in her element, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then for number two, I would say To Catch a Thief.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's another Hitchcock film, but definitely Rear Window and To Catch a Thief. If you're going to see two Grace Kelly films, those two are two of her best roles, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then coming in at number three, I would definitely say High Society.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of fun things happened in that film. She also joined in a chorus with Bing singing True Love. You know, that was something fun for her. Yeah, I just think that's such a fun film.
Absolutely.
And then number four, I would say The Country Girl.
Mm.
Because it's different from the other three films that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really can see the diversity in her acting and how she is not always glamorous, not always wearing the most beautiful dress or gown.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's what she won the Academy Award for. So I definitely would say The Country Girl is in the top five Grace Kelly films.
Hmm. Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great. I love talking about Grace Kelly and old Hollywood.
Yes.
It's one of my number one passions. You know, I just love what I do and interacting and talking to so many people. I'm so thankful I found a community of people that today still want to, you know, commemorate and uphold the legacy of old Hollywood and all these wonderful stars.
Yes. Oh, I had a question for you.
Yes.
Have you ever thought about reaching out to any of her kids?
I haven't. But, you know, what they did, Princess Grace Foundation,
mm-hmm.
they did reach out to some Grace Kelly accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of us just received a letter from Monaco as sort of a token of appreciation for all the work we've been doing. And I don't know if you saw some of the posts on Instagram, but we all received an authentic Princess Grace stamp all the way from Monaco.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this is also in support of the newly launched page or, you know, side of Princess Grace Foundation. There's a new thing they have going called Grace Influential.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've heard of it.
I haven't.
So they're basically focusing on more on Grace's legacy, you know, as a fashion icon and actress.
Absolutely.
And so we've been supporting that, and so I think that they just wanted to thank us for our support of that, and they sent some letters to us all the way from Monaco.
Wow.
Which I think that is one of the biggest honors I have ever been given.
Right. Well, thank you so much. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Movie Magic, and we will see you next time.